all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I have the privilege of being your host today. And I'm very excited about our program. We're going to be talking with a couple of authors, Jenny LaSala and Jim Markson, and their book is entitled Vietnam and Beyond, Veterans Reflections, and it's a really great story. I encourage everybody to listen in, and I think you're going to really enjoy the whole idea of telling stories, which, of course, is what we do here at Veterans Radio. Speaking of stories, and a little quick promo here, if you would like to support Veterans Radio, and of course you would, we all know that, you can go to our website and just click on the supporting us, and on there it shows how you can either advertise with Veterans Radio or you can purchase our own first book entitled Best of Veterans Radio, Vietnam Stories, which is a collection of seven of what we thought were some of our better stories about Vietnam. Considering we've been doing this program now for a little over 11 years, it's amazing that we could narrow it down to seven stories. I'm sure there are a lot many more of them that we could include. And I know that we are putting together our next edition, I guess you could say, which would be about Korea. And then we're going to put one together about World War II, and then we're going to put one together about Iraq and Afghanistan. So we're going to have a whole series of these. And anybody out there that knows how to market books would be more than happy to talk to you, because we are really beginners at this whole thing. So it's kind of fun. But if you would like to support Veterans Radio for $25, we'll send you a copy of the Vietnam Stories, Best of Veterans Radio. Just go to supporting us on our website, and we'll take care of it. We've got PayPal, and you can also send us a check, of course, to Veterans Radio. The other thing that we would like to point out to you is that you can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook. Jenny LaSala did a great job of posting on the Facebook site for her book, directing people to ours, and it seems like we picked up quite a few followers on Facebook, so we're really excited about that. And we're also on Twitter, so you can tweet us if you would like to do that. But right now we're going to take our first break, and we're going to be coming back, and we're going to be talking with Jenny LaSala and Jim Markson. The book is Vietnam and Beyond. I want to encourage you out there to, if you have a story you want to get in on with us, you can give us a call here at WHAM, talk 1600-734-822-1600. Or if you're out there in wherever you happen to be, down under in Australia, because I know they're always listening out there, good day, mates. It's 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600. We'll be right back with our guest. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. We're back here on Veterans Radio, and I want to welcome to our program today Jenny LaSala. Jenny, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much.
It is such a privilege to talk to you. And on our other line is Jim Markson. Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you. I'm here.
Everybody's here. And I'm really excited to talk to both of you. You've put together this book entitled Vietnam and Beyond, and I'm going to start off with Jenny first here, though. And Jenny, you and Jim had a relationship a long time ago, it seems. And you had also done another book, which you can talk about a little bit. But how did this book come together?
Well, it all began when I published my father's wartime letters written during World War II as a 101st Airborne Paratrooper. I put that together in 2013, and I shipped a copy of the book to Jim. We had been married 14 years. And got divorced in 1987. And when I sent the book to Jim, he called me one day last summer and said how he could relate to so many sentiments expressed by my father from World War II. And I was surprised at that. And then Jim went on to tell me that his mother had saved all of his letters sent home from Vietnam, which I never knew, because Jim never talked about his Vietnam experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I said, well, why don't we publish your letters? And that's how the collaboration began. And it's been a wonderful, eye-opening experience, I think, for both of us. Wouldn't you say, Jim?
Absolutely.
He's a man of few words, right?
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I understand in reading your book that by reading Jenny's first book that, wow, you know, there are so many similarities. And in doing Veterans Radio, as I mentioned, for the length of time we've been doing it, so many of the veterans can relate to each other's stories because it doesn't make any difference where in combat that you were. There are so many things that occurred that people that veterans especially can relate to. You know, the fear of being, you know, shot at, or you mentioned in your story you had one thing about rockets coming in one night, and you know, and I, as soon as I was reading it, I had my own little flashback to you know, trying to figure out how I could dig a hole in a runway when they were walking rockets down our runway. And you know, and I
can relate to that very well.
You know, and there are lots of us out there that can do that. So I think that the stories, that particular type of story, is in here. Tell me a little bit about how you got into the military, Jim. How did you decide to join?
Okay, well, I had gotten out of high school in 1966, and I was lost. I didn't know what to do with myself, and I was working in a butcher store. And the owner of the butcher store, his son was an air traffic controller. And he had learned how to be an air traffic controller in the Air Force. And they took me out to an air traffic control facility out in Long Island, Ronkonkoma. And I'm looking at these guys in the radar room and talking all of this stuff. And he's telling me that, you know, you don't have to go to college, go in the Air Force and get out after 4 years. And the FAA will pick you right up. And you can make really nice money. And I went to see the recruiter, like, immediately.
And then what happened?
Well, okay, that's the status and the story changed. I had scored high on the aptitude test for air traffic control, and I was in basic training out in Texas. And they called me down for my air traffic control physical. And a long story short, you had to be in perfect shape. The Air Force considered you an airman, just as if you were going to be a pilot. And I had 20/40 in my right eye, and they disqualified me from air traffic control, and they put me into security police, and I was in tears. But I spent the next 4 years in security police.
Well, I can certainly understand being upset by that. Every once in a while, I feel like I should start the program out. Oh, this is Sky Chief 20 approaching wherever you are. And we would talk to these guys in the towers that would always somehow figure out how to get us all in safely. You know, I tried to, you know, we were talking earlier with Jim, and he had been at Benoit for a little bit while, and then he was down at Tonsonute. And I only had to land at Tonsonute one time. And this is in a helicopter, so I'll give my quick version of the story. I'm on final approach, and a guy calls, you know, comes over the radio and says, you know, Army helicopter, you know, expedite your approach. And we're going, why? This is really fun. And they say, you know, fast movers coming behind you. And the door gunner looked out the back and says, we got a jet. So, you know, luckily with a helicopter, we could just pull over and land pretty much anywhere. But
at the time that I was in Tonsonute, and I didn't realize it until later, it was the busiest airport in the world.
I could certainly believe that, because both of you and I flew in and out of there. The best part was the flight out. But anyway, we'll get to that later on. Okay, so you and Jenny get together. You have read Jenny's book about her dad's letters, and you decide to do these. What was it about her book that motivated you to let your own letters loose?
Well, the thing was that these were letters that our father, Dave, had written home during World War II. And one of the things that's kind of fascinated me is that I knew what was coming. He's writing letters in May 1944. Now, I know my history. I know what happened in June 6, 1944. He didn't have a clue. You know, he's writing you know, I'm in the best shape I'm ever in. You know, I hope we get married and I love you and stuff. And meanwhile, I know, damn, it's getting close to D-Day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's never experienced anything. That's going to be his first experience in combat. And that was like just, and then you don't hear from him. There's no more letters for quite a while. And I, because I know what's going on and he didn't. And then it goes on and on as he progresses through Europe. He gets wounded and things. And then I'm thinking to myself, I said, you know, I wrote home letters to my mother, and she saved every one of them, and I had them in a little Ziploc bag. And I hadn't looked at them since I wrote them, since like 1968. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided, I would open them up and read the first letter or two, and then just, you know, put them back. And that's when I mentioned it to Jenny, and that's when I really went into the letters in detail.
Well, it's kind of fascinating because I know that there's a basket of letters that I wrote in Vietnam, and I'm more and more tempted to go back and look at them, but I always, you know, I don't know what kind of silly things did I write and so on and so forth. But it was like,
exactly,
you know, and it's, you know, you don't want to embarrass anybody, but I was thinking, you know, your mom saved these letters, and it's something that I found to be really important. I didn't realize the emotional toll that being overseas took on my mom and my wife at the time. And then I thought about, you know, I'm in Vietnam for another year and so forth, you know, and you did the same thing. And then your mom is probably reliving those years in 1944 and 45 where she's gone through that another time.
Exactly. Yes.
Go ahead,
Jim. Very true. Yeah, what you just said is very true, that Jim's mother, who was my mother-in-law, she lost her brother to the war, and her sister lost her husband. So she had those experiences from the war, and she knew how very important the letters were. So she was very careful in keeping all of Jim's letters and even numbered them, put them in sequential order for him.
That's helpful.
And what I loved about Jim's book, of course, I couldn't do it with my father's because he passed in 99, but with Jim's book, I was typing the letters into the manuscript, and Jim said, well, you know, I think I should add reflections of today, looking back 47 years. I said, oh, that's great. Well, mm-hmm. I had to type all of that into the manuscript, and as I'm reading and typing, I'm crying like a baby in front of my computer because he never told me these things. He never talked about it. And then out of the blue, Jim said one day last summer, he said, well, didn't Holly, our daughter, tell you that I was interviewed on Make the Connection? I said, no, I'd like to see it. I watched the interview. Again, I cried like a baby. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to step outside of myself, really, and realize, wait a minute, Jim's talking about never having dealt with what happened over in Vietnam. You know, you're supposed to come back home and tough it up and be strong and go to work and get a job and, you know, just go back to being normal, whatever normal is. But his reflections, when you read the book, and he goes back and he tells what was really going on, things that he didn't write home about because he didn't want to upset his mom and dad.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of you soldiers have done. You don't want to write and tell them what's really happening. They were worried to begin with, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I remember my wife and I were still married, thankfully, that I would have to use code almost, like, because we did a lot of missions that were in Cambodia before it was popular. And so it's, you know, well, I'm going out, you know, going up north today, and that meant where I was going, and I'll mm-hmm. let you know when I get home. And it's fascinating to me when I was reading your book and reading Jim's reflections on how clearly Jim, that you remember what you were doing on a particular, maybe not the days specifically, but the time period. You know, and how you were able to remember that. And I thought I was the only one that, you know, I can flash back 50 years. I can't flash back to this morning.
a lot of that stuff I had written in my letters home, and I was amazed at the accuracy of the, what time we were called out on red alert, and what time the first tracer round started to come in. And then I also found on the internet, it's an after action battle report, and that was written by the 7th Air Force. And I don't know who was, is like these scorekeepers are watching, and they, minute by minute, unit by unit, they in a chronological order, just exactly what happened. But the letters that I had written home were pretty accurate too. It wasn't just strictly from memory.
I think it's rather fascinating when you think about all the information that is available to us today.
It's unbelievable.
It is. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We're talking to Jim Markson and Jenny LaScala. Their book is entitled Vietnam and Beyond, Veterans Reflections. And I encourage you, if you want to give us a call here at Veterans Radio, you can do that, 734-822-1600 if you're in Michigan. Or if you're out there in the, wherever you happen to be, it's 844-838-1600. We have one of your contributors, I guess you could say, to the book is on the line, and that's Pat O'Connor. And I'm going to bring Pat on, and I'm scrambling through here as I go through the book to try and find his story. But, Pat, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thank you.
So tell me a little bit about you and how you decided, or they talked to you into participating in this.
Well, actually, I was on my Facebook, and I saw a little clip that said, comes a soldier's whisper. And underneath of that was Vietnam and Beyond and Jenny LaScala, and I wrote her a note, and she replied the next morning, and from that point on, I've kept in touch with her. And oddly enough, her husband, former husband, Jim, he was security police. Well, so was I. And I was there 68-69 and experienced a lot of the same things that he did with the incoming rockets. And now, I didn't talk about this stuff for 36 years. And
that used to be the hallmark.
Finally, after realizing I had a really bad drinking problem, I went to the VA for help here in Dover, Delaware, and they put me in to see a licensed clinical social worker, and she helped me through the alcohol problem, and I've been in therapy for PTSD since 2005. ironic that her husband was there around the same time frame I was, and my birthday is July 28th, and I believe when I'm reading the book, he was July 28th also.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot of parallels here, almost identical.
That really, so I read the book. Jenny sent me a copy of the book, and I loved it. It just, it brought me a lot of anxiety, I have to tell you that.
It did me, too, and I hadn't looked at those letters in 40-something years.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that happened. We had a water point outside the base, was 27 miles outside the base that we had to guard, and that was scary. There was just two of us out there, one on a rear bunker and one on the front.
Well, Pat, where were you?
I was in Phan Rang.
That's up north, right?
Yeah, it's not that far north. It's just a little ways about 20-25 miles south of Cameron Bay.
Okay.
We were.
I think I flew through there one time.
Well, you probably did. You've been a lot of places, I noticed. Tuiwa, Benhua.
Oh, we got around.
Well, you were security police. Funny.
No, not
when
me.
I went in.
No, I wasn't. I was a helicopter pilot.
Oh, okay. When I went in, I was put in aircraft maintenance training, and there were three different classes in aircraft maintenance training, and only after 2 weeks they took two of our classes. They sent one of the classes to Oklahoma and made them cooks, and they sent my class to Lackland and made us security police.
Mm-hmm.
They changed our AFSC that quick. They needed more security police in Vietnam, I found out.
Well, there's a lot of people, and probably some of our listeners, I know we have talked to other Air Force security police and also some dog handlers. And, Pat, I want to thank you for tuning, you know, giving us a call and letting us know there. And I encourage people, again, of course, to go out and buy this book, Vietnam and Beyond, Veteran Reflections. Not only is Pat in there, but there's a whole bunch of other people that we're going to be talking about as the program continues. Pat, thank you very much, and God bless you, and thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for listening, and thank you for Jenny LaSala.
I think a lot of people are thanking them for Jenny LaSala. Thanks a lot.
All right.
What, Jenny, I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but you included a lot of other veterans' little stories toward the end of this book. How did that come about?
Well, what happened was, as I was typing Jim's letters and his reflections into the manuscript, the book started to take on a life of its own, which is what happened with my father's book, Come the Soldier's Whisper. And I said, Jim, I think it would be a good idea if we were to send an interview questionnaire out to other Vietnam veterans. And that's what I did. And it took about 9 months to gather stories. We ended up with about 12 other Vietnam veterans who were showcased in the book as well. But then I took it a step further. Because I was able to recognize that war changes a soldier, it changes the family too, and that it doesn't matter which war you fought in, all soldiers were saying the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. just in different ways. So we also sent interview questionnaire forms out to veterans of all wars. So we have over 30-some veterans from World War II, Korea, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And their stories are just beautiful. Now, Pat O'Connor, who we just had on the show, although Pat's stories did not make it into the actual book, Vietnam and Beyond, because I hadn't met Pat yet.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Facebook page which is entitled Come the Soldier's Whisper. That's what Pat mentioned. And so I post stories daily, every day, to honor all veterans of all wars. And I showcase Pat O'Connor's story on the Facebook page. And I have to tell you, people love the stories. They embrace it. They love reading all the veterans' stories. Sometimes it will just showcase a veteran's picture, maybe mm-hmm. from World War I. And if we don't have a story or information on them, we just post the story and just say in honor of. And so that's what we've been doing. But Pat happens to be a wonderful writer, and he has told me that by going back in time and reading Jim's book, Vietnam and Beyond, it's actually helped heal him, which I couldn't be happier over that.
Well, I think what happens, Jenny and Jim, and I'm hoping you will agree with this, is that as we go back and we read some of these stories, we find out that we're not alone. And I think that's what was so important. And, you know, when Jim and I came home from Vietnam, people didn't necessarily even want to talk to us if they found out we were a veteran. So many of us didn't tell anybody we were. You know,
right.
Well, that's exactly what in one of my interviews or in the book too. I got to the point where if someone asked me if I had been in Vietnam, I would just say no, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to hear it. What was going to come if I said yeah?
What?
And on another thing, the Air Force had made a mistake in my favor on my leave when I left Vietnam. I still had 2 years to go in the Air Force, and they had given me by mistake 6 weeks leave. And at first, I was thrilled because I was going to stay home for 6 weeks, but
mm-hmm.
the reception was so bad, and the drug problem in Brooklyn with guys I grew up with was also yeah. so bad. After 3 weeks, I canceled my leave, and I went to Holland. I just wanted to get out of here. My mother was in tears. I couldn't take it.
I can certainly understand that. We've got about a minute till we take a break at the bottom of the hour. And when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about your experiences in Vietnam, of course, and
sure.
how you maneuvered this transfer to Holland, because it's kind of a cute story, I think. We're talking with Jenny LaSalle and Jim Marks, and the book is Vietnam and Beyond. You can purchase this at pretty much anywhere. You can go onto our website, click on it. It's on our homepage. It's going to be in our bookstore. That's also available at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. And Jenny is a member of the Military Writers Society of America. And, boy, I was searching all over my house. I was positive that I had that other book, and I couldn't find it. So I'll have to get one myself, the one about your dad. But
thank you.
So I'm anxious to remind everybody out there that you can give us a call if you've got a story that you'd like to add to our conversation. The number here in Michigan is 734-822-1600 or 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET-1600. And we'll get you on to Veterans Radio and hear your story, because it's important that we hear these stories. You know, we want to give you as many possible outlets to get these stories out. I think it'd be great if we were able to. I'd love to sit down with my dad and my grandfather and find out a little bit more about them, but they're gone, and they never bothered telling anybody. So, you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back after the news. Enjoy the music.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Jack Jacobs, although seriously wounded, made repeated trips across an open rice paddy, evacuating wounded and their weapons. Details after this.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Jacob served as an assistant battalion advisor in Kien Phong Province, Republic of Vietnam. The battalion was advancing when it came under intense heavy machine gun and mortar fire. Jacobs called for and directed airstrikes on the enemy positions. Due to the intensity of the enemy fire and heavy casualties to the command group, including the company commander, the attack stopped and the friendly troops became disorganized. Wounded by mortar fragments, Jacobs assumed command of the company, ordered a withdrawal from the exposed position, and established a defensive perimeter. Despite heavy bleeding from head wounds that impaired his vision, Jacobs returned under intense fire to evacuate a seriously wounded advisor to safety, where he administered life-saving first aid. He then returned through heavy automatic weapons fire to evacuate the wounded company commander. Jacobs made repeated trips across the fire-swept open rice paddies, evacuating wounded and their weapons. On three separate occasions, Jacob drove off Viet Cong squads who were searching for Allied wounded and weapons, single-handedly killing three and wounding several others. His actions saved the lives of a U.S. advisor and 13 Allied soldiers. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
He blesses the boy as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and I finally know the lyrics of that song. And we're talking with Jenny LaSalle and Jim Markson. Their book is Vietnam and Beyond, Veteran Recollections. And I picked that particular tune because it happened to be a song that we use quite often while I was in Vietnam to imbibe in adult beverages. And, you know, and do a little karaoke with it. And then after I read the book, Vietnam and Beyond, I finally figured out it's dedicated to chaplains. Right, Jim?
Oh. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
I think it's written in the book. When I was reading it, I said, holy moly. Jenny, did you know that?
Oh, yes. Yes, I know who added that. That was Dale Jordan, a Vietnam veteran.
Okay.
He's one of the Vietnam veterans whose letters we showcase in the book. And he chose that song. And I think we have four lines of the lyrics from it.
Right.
Because he did say it was dedicated to the chaplains. So, yes, there's so many endearing stories and little tidbits of, you know, from each one of the veterans' experiences. And I wanted to also share, too, that Jim has a wonderful website. It's www.vietnamandbeyond.com. And people can just go to visit and read a book excerpt. We've got fabulous reviews so far. I think there's about 15 or 16 five-star reviews on Amazon alone. And we've put a collection on the website with interviews and videos. And they'll have a wonderful time just visiting the website.
I think they will. In fact, the flyer that I sent out, I swiped one of the reviews from Amazon, and it said, you know, it says one of the most insightful books written about Vietnam so far. The author takes you into the day-to-day life of his 366 days in Vietnam through both his personal letters and brief narrations. He unselfishly shares almost half the book with his fellow veterans who freely tell their stories of Vietnam and the shameful mistreatment they experienced when they rotated back to civilian life. Due to both PTSD and being publicly ostracized, many of these men began their hardest fights after the war. He takes you on a detailed journey that begins with him being a naive teenager, joining the Air Force to be assigned in Saigon during the height of the Tet Offensive. This book serves as a real tribute not to war or the military, but instead to the individual. It is a must-read, and I have to agree with that wholeheartedly. I like that one. I have to see if I can come up with something that somebody hasn't said yet about this book. Well, let's kind of go back to Vietnam, Jim, just for a little bit. You had an unusual visitor while you were there. Can you tell us a little bit about the guest that you had in Vietnam?
I sure did, and when I think about that now, how things have changed. I mean, that would be like, in my opinion, impossible to have something like that happen now. My sister worked for Pan American Airlines, and she was a big traveler. And she wrote me a letter and wanted to know if she could come over for a visit. So I was stationed in Saigon, and Saigon was technically a secure area. So I went to the NCOICs, the bosses, and told them my story, and they not only agreed with me, but they gave me and another security policeman, he's from Texas, Roger Underwood, they gave us 3-day pass to show her around.
Wow. I'm surprised.
And the other part is at Saigon, which, like I said, that was the busiest airport in the world at the time, and the heliport was right across the street from the security police barracks, and I was a regular visitor.
Was that?
I'm
sorry to interrupt. Was that Hotel 3?
No, I don't know. I don't know the call sign, but it was right across the street from the security police barracks. Well, anyway, you know, familiar with what happens. Helicopters are coming in and going all day long. This helicopter lands and says, "We're going to Benoit. Anybody want to go? Who's going to Benoit?" So me and my sister walk out, and one of the gunners says, "Hop on." We did. And they took us to Benoit. And there's my sister sitting in this Huey Slick, I believe it was. And there's two guys sitting out of each door with M60 machine guns. And we're flying over Vietnam to Benoit.
I think it must have been a highlight of her life, too.
I recently wrote her, you know, and asked her to write what she remembered, and the first words out of her mouth was, "I'll never forget that trip."
I certainly would never forget that. We kept trying to figure out how much fuel it would take for us to fly home. and how we were going to steal a helicopter and, you know, get it back to the States, but we never came up with a good idea. We just wanted to try as much as we could. I was surprised that Armed Forces Radio or television or, you know, Military Times or something like that didn't follow you around for 3 days.
No, it was like nothing, you know, there's so much going on. He's just another American civilian. Oh, yeah, okay, you know, there was, you know, no, oh, you have to put in for this 3 months in advance, you know, like, you have to get this approved. Is anybody going to Benoit? Yeah, how far?
Well, I know we did that all the time. Anybody need to, you know, we're going here. Does anybody want to ride kind of thing? And that's the only way I ever got to meet some Red Cross girls. Donut Dolly. They said, we need to go here. We're going there. I don't think we were, but we decided to go there anyway. But, you know, what are you going to do? You know, you're 21, 22 years old. That's the way they got us to do those things, I think, because we were 20 and 21 years
old. Absolutely. You didn't question anything. You just did it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, not a problem. Hey, I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned a few times that in the book about being in the Air Force and that you felt that you had, you know, at least better food than most of the other branches had. And being at Tansanuchi, you had, you know, it was almost like being on a base back in the States because you were concerned about all these inspections and so forth. Could you talk about that just briefly?
The thing that made me volunteer for Vietnam is, first off, I was disappointed with getting into security police. And then I got stationed in Portsmouth, New Hampshire at a strategic air command base where they had B-52s with nuclear weapons on. Mm-hmm. And my job was to stand out and in the weather, whatever it was, I'd be out there for eight and a half hours and I'd be freezing. And it was so strict, and it had to be because there was nuclear, each B-52 had four atomic bombs on it.
Right.
It was so strict. I mean, it was, you couldn't move, you couldn't do anything, you were being watched by people that were watching, you're guarding the plane, and there's people watching you to make sure you're guarding the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too much to me, so whenever they would come around asking for volunteers, my hand would go up. And eventually, I volunteered and went to Vietnam, because I just couldn't take the strictness of the Strategic Air Command base and the coldness, and just mentally it was driving me crazy. And I wasn't the only one. I met other security policemen that had volunteered for Vietnam also just to get out of being in a Strategic Air Command base in the States.
You know, it's always interesting doing this program. I find out so much about these other branches of the service. I had no concept of what people in the Air Force did. You know, I figured everybody was a jet pilot. You know, in the Navy, everybody was on a battleship or something like that, and we found out that you were doing the same type, many of the same types of jobs that we were doing in the Army. You had to guard you had to guard a tree or something sometimes, it seemed. And, and it just, you know, we start coming into this mutual admiration society of anybody who's a veteran. We've all been through similar situations. And I think that that's what's so important about what you and Jenny are doing with your books and the stories and what we're trying to do here on Veterans Radio and the Veterans History Project of trying to get all these stories down so that somewhere out in the future, you know, our great-great-grandchildren are going to listen in sometime and go, so that's what he did.
Absolutely.
I think that's what's so important.
By the way, we're getting to the food in Tansanut. I was first stationed in a place called Quy Nhon, and that was a brand new base. And the living conditions there, as far as being in the Air Force, they were kind of poor. Then they got a little bit better at Benoit, but I remember the drinking water, and I even write about it in my
yeah.
book. It was the color of apple juice until I got to Saigon. In Saigon, we had real water. We had we didn't have powdered milk. And also in the inspections and stuff, back to a little bit, just a little bit like it was at a SAC base, but nowhere near the strictness. But yeah, it started to get a little bit like stateside. And I was even wanting to get out of there too, because of that.
Well, I can certainly relate to that because we did have the powdered milk. And even though I was in Longmont, which is, you know, across the street from Benoit, the food sometimes was a little bit scary. And as you mentioned, the water was always scary. And it was just kind of the adventure. We're going to take another real quick break, and then we'll be back to finish this up. And I want to talk about your coming home and Jenny, again, putting this whole book together and, you know, what you've got going in the future. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Where we've been for the last couple of segments on the program here at Veterans Radio. We've been in Vietnam, and I love listening to that music. It just, I don't know what it is about it, Jim, but it takes you back, and most of the time it takes you back to pleasant memories.
Yes, there was some great music that came out of those years.
That's very true. We're talking with Jim Markson and Jenny LaSalle, who put together a book entitled Vietnam and Beyond, Veteran Reflections, letters that Jim had written home to his mom while he was in Vietnam, 1967 to 68. He got stuck with a leap year, so he ended up with 366 days in country, which would have driven me crazy that extra day. I was already hiding in the bunker with a week, you know, 2 weeks to go, not wanting to ever come out again. But I encourage people to check out this book. It's really a fascinating story in that it relates to every one of you who are in Vietnam, probably also relates to every one of you that have been in the service any time during your life, even the time in basic training, which we always we like to tell people, you know, oh, I didn't get to go anywhere, I didn't do anything yet, but you went through basic, that's all you had to do. You know, you've never had people talk to you that way before, and you probably never will again.
Well, I have to interject here, too, because I think it's important. And when I was sending out the interview questionnaire forms to all the veterans as potential participants in the book, I had so many of them say, oh, no, I served during peacetime, or, I wasn't a combat, I wasn't in the jungle. I said, listen, you served, you did your time. You do have a story, you just don't realize it. And a couple of the guys came back and said, okay, give me the questionnaire, I'll give it a try. Some of them came back with the best stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad that they think they don't have a story to tell, or they think because they weren't in the thick of the jungle, which had to have been horrific for those men who did that kind of tour. But everyone who served played a part. You have to take all the parts, and that gives you the whole picture.
Absolutely.
Everybody in war does their part, and they're all important, and that's why we love featuring everybody from all wars on the Facebook page of Come to Soldiers Whisper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place where people, it gives them a visual, it gives them pictures to see of the men and women who've served. And by the way, we have 5 women veterans who participate in Jim's book.
I was aware of that.
I'm
planning on contacting them because we have, we want to get this newest generation's stories out also.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention, too, I got a call from a history teacher yesterday. He's invited me. I'd like for Jim to come if he can. We're about 6 hours apart. But in April, he wants us to attend a history class after he gives his high school students, an assignment to come back to class with a photo of someone in their family or friends who served in the military, any war,
mm-hmm.
and to do a short story. And that's where we'll come in, and we'll do an open question-answer segment. And I applauded this history teacher. I said, what a wonderful thing you're doing, because we're losing our children to not knowing our history, and they've got to know it, or we'll repeat it.
Well, yes, we know that. Now, that's always a possibility. And I think that it's important. We do that quite a bit around here. And Jim, I know you were very much involved with the Vietnam Veterans of America, although it took you a while to get into it. I'm in it, but I'm not very active, I have to say. But can you tell me a little bit about what that means to you, being a part of that Vietnam Veterans of America?
Well, I belong to the Vietnam Veterans of America and also the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 30 years. I got discharged in 1970. And I had nothing to do with any veterans organization until about 2000. And I initially joined, I got a letter in the mail, and I joined the Vietnam Veterans of America, and I started going to meetings there. And I found it very, very rewarding, and I also regret that I waited so long, but that was the part of being a Vietnam vet from that homecoming. And I talk about it in my book. We just hid, and we said nothing. We even denied that we were veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was. And then one of the veterans from the Vietnam Veterans of America was the commander of a local Veterans of Foreign Wars post. It was only a mile from where I lived, and I had never, ever stepped foot in it. And then one day I did, and I became even more involved with the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And for 2 years, 2010 and 11, I was the commander. And like I said, I really regret that 30 years that I hid. And we do everything we can now to get these guys from Iraq and Afghanistan to join a veterans organization, the VFW, the American Legion, go to the VA and get registered.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just sit there and hide somewhere and do other things that aren't good for you.
No, we encourage people to do that also. And we know that, you know, the kind of paraphrase of Vietnam Veterans of America is never again will one generation of veterans ignore another. And
absolutely.
You know, we just want to make sure that these men and women get the help that they need, to get the benefits that they need, and that they're entitled to. That goes to another part of the story. You know, Jenny, you were talking about the vets. Well, I didn't do anything. But, you know, it wasn't their fault. There was not something going on in 1957 or 58. They couldn't help that. And
exactly.
They would have. They would have gone. Let's go with Jenny first.
Yeah. You know, when my father rarely spoke about the war, but it wasn't until I sat down as a mature woman and put all of those letters in date order and read them for the first time in 2012. And I got to know my father for the first time as he was 18, 19, and 20, and 21.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized something really fascinating, that I recognized that my father did change. He came back different. And being different, that change in him had a profound impact and effect on the shaping and molding of me and my three siblings.
Absolutely.
It had to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've talked to other grown children of World War II vets, Vietnam vets, and they have very similar stories to mine and Jim. One is Carol Schultz-Vento.
Mm-hmm.
Her father was 101st Airborne in World War II. She wrote a fabulous book, The Hidden Legacy.
Yep.
Another one is Steve Sparks, Reconciliation, A Son's Story. And another young lady wrote a beautiful book about her dad who served in Vietnam, Julie K. Weber-Torres, A Daughter's Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of these books, we're all saying the same thing, that war changed my dad, it changed me too. And once I understood that, I can't tell you enough, Dale, I began to heal. I began to become peaceful, and now I'm working on a children's book. I keep thinking, okay, now I'm done. I have these wonderful memoirs from my Jim and my children. Our son, Curtis, is 34. He'll be 35 coming up soon. Holly is 30. She'll be 31. And by the way, Holly, last year when we were in the midst of this collaboration, I think I told you, Jim, she called me out of the blue one day and she said, Mom, I don't know what's going on, but Daddy has changed since he started working with you on this book project. I knew exactly what she meant, but I played dumb and I said, really, Holly, what do you mean? Well, you know, Dad laughs a lot now. He's not, you know, it's not difficult to have conversation with him anymore. He seems happy, Mom. And I was so delighted that our grown child actually saw the healing taking place. Nothing could make me happier. Wow. And that's what I hope for others that read Jim's letters and his reflections of today.
Well, I think that's very important. You know, sometimes we just have to purge ourselves of whatever demons that we have. And, again, making us aware that other people have similar demons and that they've come out the other side. And you can say, wow, if they can do it, I think I can probably do it, too. So let's try. Jim, tell me a little bit about, we've got about two minutes. We got about 2 minutes to go, which is, this program goes much too quickly sometimes. tell me about your homecoming. I don't want to spoil the whole book, but your homecoming was classic to me.
It was. I waited all my life for that homecoming. And just the way it happened with the cab driver at the airport and how I had the cab driver drop me off at the corner, and I walked down to the middle of the block where my house was. I still had the key, and it just coincidentally, it was just like at dawn. The sun was just coming up. It was a Saturday or a Sunday morning. I opened up the front door and caught my father as he was just getting out of bed, going into the bathroom, and I couldn't have planned it any better. I just said, Dad, he turned around, and called out to my mother. He said, Mother, Jimmy's home. And then in his own sarcastic way, he said to me, why didn't you tell us you were coming home? There's nothing to eat in the house.
There's never anything to eat in the house, of course. Are you kidding?
No.
Our parents always had food in the house. I don't, that lost generation trait, I don't know how we got away with that. There's our theme, unfortunately. Jenny LaSala, Jim Markson, I want to thank you both so very much for being on Veterans Radio. The book is Vietnam and Beyond, Veteran Reflections. You can find it on our website, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I encourage all veterans and their families to check it out because it explains a lot. It really does. If you have somebody in your family that's been in the service, I think there's a story in here that will sound familiar to them and to you. And so to both of you, I'm hoping to have you back on the program again. I look forward to meeting you both in person at some point, I hope, because I get back to Brooklyn quite a bit. My nephew lives on Westminster Avenue. How's that? So thank you very much, both of you.
Of course.
That's around the corner, right? Thanks very much. I got to go. Holy smokes. You are dismissed.